This is KHEN LPFM Radio, 106.9 Salida, Colorado, and you're listening to Truth Quest with Melody, and we're community-supported radio, and we're streamed on the Internet at khen.org, and if you'd like to listen to tonight's program or any past programs of Truth Quest with Melody, they're available at www.gimmesometruth.info or link from the khen.org website. And my tonight I have a special returning guest is George Green, and he is a former investment banker, a registered financial principal with the NASD, and a broker-dealer, securities underwriter, real estate developer, insurance broker, and publisher. And he's been a frequent guest on radio and TV and talk shows, and he's a publisher of the Handbook for the New Paradigm. And he's the president of Global Insights, Inc., and George has spoken to thousands of people through his lectures and has appeared on numerous talk shows and TV shows telling his story. Now, George, are you there again? Or did I leave?
I'm here.
Okay, great. Something went on with the screen here, and I thought maybe I'd have dropped you, and I hope I didn't. So, and by the way, that song by Poker Face wasn't the song that I told you it was. I forgot that the one that I have labeled here isn't got the right labeling for the right song, but that was Poker Face. And George, is there anything you'd like to add to what I had just read on your credentials?
No, I just I played Monopoly in such a good way that I got invited to the inner circle of the people that are planning on taking over the world. So I have a different perspective, and that's I used to think the same way they did until I woke up to what their ultimate game is. And so that's a little bit more of my background. But I played Monopoly. I owned everything except for the railroads.
And so it, as far as the, you feel like you're kind of alone when you, somebody that has been in those kind of inner circles and now decided that they didn't want to play with those people?
Well, no, actually there's other people that were in the same position as the whistleblowers, and they're out trying to do, bring people to the forefront of what's really going on. I mean, I talked to several today. I talked to some friends even in the CIA that come out. They want to talk to people. Rodney Stitch, who used to be a government insider, he's published many books, as a matter of fact, you know, Defrauding America, Unfriendly Skies, Drugging America, and he got all the whistleblowers to come forth and say the truth. But he's been doing the same thing for about 20-some years, and out of his own pocket, he's lost like, you know, $12 million just getting out information. Because there's nobody out here paying for this stuff, as you know. It's just it's a different game. And they, in fact, the big push we got on right now, I mean, D.V. Kidd out in California right now is pushing for all of the senators, or what we call hard money people, to come up to the plate right now, because if we don't have it, it's almost all over. It's just a question, you know, we're going to get it squared away, so they're coming down, and it's coming out now that the Plunge Committee, who, frankly, I shut down my brokerage firm in Denver because of that. And that was back in the 87. That's when the market dropped 20 points in one day, and the next day I got a letter from the feds offering to loan me all the money to maintain the market. And several of the brokerage firms in Denver then closed up after we found out what was going on. So what happened is that the Federal Reserve set up their own, what they call the Plunge Protection Team, or the Plunge Committee. And they're the one that's running the market up right now with phony money to keep things going. And how that works is so simple. They just have to buy 100 shares of stock 10 minutes before the day close at any price they determine, and that determines the price of the other 100 million shares out. So you have the illusion that the stock market's going up, and it's not.
Well, I've definitely heard people saying to the effect that they, you know, it looked rather manipulated, and but I had no idea.
I'm just telling you how they do it. The whole thing is coming apart because everything is being manipulated back from one lever to the other, whether it's newspapers, whether it's the movies. The whole thing is all controlled by very few people, and frankly, very little bit of the truth gets running out there. You're down, in Colorado, where I'm a native of it, and I know a lot of the history of Colorado, how it all worked. I mean, I was born there, so I know a little bit, but that's just one state. All the states have problems. And I got many state representatives and friends that are working right now on the problem. The problem is the United States is basically on a downhill run, and you and your listeners want to know how to get out of this thing, and they're not going to get out of it unscathed. You're not going to go back like it was. This is not that's what they want you to keep the illusion of. They've been loading billions of dollars in the banks to make it so you think that everything's going along, so when this barrel hits the bottom of the Niagara Falls, and you're in it right now, you won't know what happened.
Well, George, why don't you give us a little bit, I read a little bit of your background, but I think giving a little bit of the story, just because we are in the state of Colorado particularly, so that kind of people can kind of identify with your background, maybe you can hit a little bit on your original story and then kind of get into going back to this particular issue of what's happening and what we need to do to maybe soften what's going to happen, if we can.
Well, to give you my story, back in the old days, my dad was in the meatpacking business in Denver. We were the third largest slaughtering plant in Denver. And one of the problems being in the meat business, and which is effective today, it takes enormous amounts of money. What it amounts to is we go out and, you know, go down to Salida or where, even the city that you're in right now, and we go buy a load of cattle from the farmers. But the rule in the federal rules, the Packers and Stockyards Act, said if I bought a load of cattle from your neighbors, we got to pay them in 24 hours. And then we turn around and we take the load of cattle down and we process them. I'm just giving an illustration. Then we turn around and sell it back to the government. Now, when do you think the government would pay us?
90 days later.
That's about, well, 60 to 90 days later. Meanwhile, because we were doing this every day in the NARD volumes of it, the only way we could do the thing would be to factor the receivables or account, you know, take the accounts receivables from the government once we processed. And we were doing the school lunch program. We were, you know, sending meat after we processed it to all the schools throughout the United States. So I had two functions. I'd put it on a loaded truck, you know, and get a bill of lading and showed that we shipped it and it was on the way. The federal government says, yeah, we got it on the way. And at that point, I would take the stuff down to the banks on 17th Street in Denver and borrow money against the receivables. So they had basically, you know, a sure thing because the government theoretically would pay us off. Well, yeah, they did that. But my problem is, on 17th Street, I had borrowed almost the loan limit every bank, because every bank had a limit of how much money they could loan us. You know, it didn't take too long in the game we were playing with, to have many millions of dollars in receivables. But one of the bankers over on East Colfax called me one day and he says, if you can give me some more money as deposits, I'll be glad to go ahead and, you know, work out a deal to loan you more money. Well, that's opened up Pandora's box because I have a lot of friends. You know, being in the business we were in, we knew a lot of people with money, and what I did was just cold, you know, talk to them on the phone and say, hey, if you want to make a couple percent more without any risk, I got a deal for you. So I'll give you an illustration. If you had $10,000, for instance, and you want to have super security, or theoretically you thought it was secure, you would go deposit in your bank, and at that time that was the FDIC in limit, as you probably remember. Anyway, the banks at that time were paying about 5% interest. Well, what I did was wrote out a check to you in advance for 2%. So you got 2% plus the 5% bank. All of a sudden, you got a 7% return with no risk. I just told you what bank to put the money into. Hmm. Now, are you aware of the fractional reserve system of the Federal Reserve?
Yes, I am. But you might explain that a little bit to the...
I'm going to give you an illustration. Let's say you put... I'll just take some of the bank. Let's say the bank wanted $1 million from me. They wanted $1 million. I put $1 million in deposits. Now, this is all your money and all your other friends that were talking about a good deal I had. But I just told you, I had nothing to do with the bank, but I did put money in there. I directed the money to be put in there. It was not in my name, it was in your name. Anyway, we put $1 million in the bank. Now, because they were a bank and a member of the Federal Reserve, that's a franchise, they were allowed to create 10 times that amount. In other words, put in $1 million, they could put $10 million out in loans. Now, how that illustrated, remember I just said that you could get 5% interest from the bank. But what if the bank charged, say, just 7% for a loan on $10 million of the clothes, of cars, for instance, just as an illustration? Well, what's 7% of $10 million? That's $700,000. That's what they could make on a $1 million deposit. So you ask me how the banks can get rich, right?
Mm-hmm.
They created that money out of thin air. It never existed. It was just, that's one of the franchise deals that they had. Now, they obviously had a pay back a fee back to the Federal Reserve for allowing them to do that. That's the reason why in Denver, for instance, is one of the big Federal Reserve banks. Now, they're all over. Now, when you start looking into the game, where I got to the attention to the feds, after 1 year, the certificate of deposit that you had with the bank, which was FDIC insured, came up for renewal. But you called me if you were going to get paid again if you left it in that bank. So I would call the bank, and if they didn't pay me, I would tell you to move the money to another bank, which in turn put the bank then basically insolvent because it didn't have that $1 million. You understand?
Uh-huh.
Well, I became very powerful up and down the thing, so the feds notified the state of Colorado that I had to be licensed to sell money. Well, that was kind of interesting. So I'm sitting in the state securities department, and I said, all right, give me a license. And the first thing they said, well, we really don't know what to do because we don't have licenses to sell money, but we've been instructed by, you know, our superiors to get you licensed. So that's when we started to discuss getting a license to sell money. And I went over and I said, if we're going to do that, you might as well give me an exam or give me something. And they said, well, we really don't know how to do that because we don't know what they're talking about, but they say we have to get you a license. And I said, well, let's do it this way. let's consider what money is. And I said, I'll get the books from their banks so we can find out. So I got the accounting book for the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. Don't you think that'd be a good source?
I guess so.
Anyway, well, I got them. Anyway, I'm looking at them, and that's the first thing I'm going to do, and I'm very, so more on my background. I went to Colorado School of Mines. I also went to University of Illinois. I studied law and business. I majored in geophysics at mines, but all these things are, old games. When I'm looking at it, I loved exams, so we're sitting here talking and looking at the books themselves. The first thing I wanted to know is, according to them, what is money? I mean, if we're going to get a license to sell money, what is it? You know, by their definitions, because that's like anything else. You want to get definitions. Well, I looked it up in their books, and they don't have one. Can you believe that?
That leaves them a lot of room to work then, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, so we arbitrarily determined that money is basically a commodity we use to keep track of the exchange in goods and services. Does that sound okay, Melody?
Mm-hmm.
That's a rough thing. I said, so if it's that, then undoubtedly it'd have to be what you and I would consider some kind of security. So therefore, the best thing that could happen is to give me a securities exam. And they said, well, in order for you to sell money, you have to be a principal. And I said, what's that? And they said, well, basically, you have to be a financial principal. Now, to tell you what, the exam is kind of like being an accountant and an attorney. And it's a written exam, lasts all day, and you have to have one to even have in a securities firm. In other words, it's a principal. Somebody has to know the whole game. So I did take the exam. They gave me the stuff, and I studied up on it for a couple of days, and I did pass the exam. And so all of a sudden, I've got I got a license to steal. I could open up a brokerage firm. So my attorneys, at that time I was playing Monopoly. I was doing a lot of real estate developing in Colorado. As a matter of fact, everywhere you see a Village Inn pancake house in Colorado, I built it probably and owned a bunch of them, just to give you an idea.
Okay.
Anyway, what happened at this point is that then I could go ahead and sell money. I was out there, and the feds were still mad at me because now I could do it legally. I had a license from the state anyway, but I had other states that were asking for money. So what happened is finally the feds just sent a letter to every bank in the United States not to do business with me. So then the next thing is, because you were calling, you were hammering, you were so used to getting extra money, I made a deal with the SNL industry. Remember the savings and loans?
Oh, yes.
Okay, well, I moved your money from the banks to the SNLs because they gave me the same deal. You were happy. You still got your, insurance, but it was under FSLIC, Federal Savings and Loan Insurance Corporation. These are all private entities. Most people don't know it. Anyway, I got involved with that. We moved a bunch of money into it. Then all of a sudden, I was building a project in Denver. It was a $100 million project, so it wasn't exactly small. And I approached a small savings loan on, 6th and Broadway, Silverado Savings, which was connected to the Bushes. Anyway, I asked for a loan for $100 million to do the project, and they gave it to me. They said, okay, we'll give you the loan, but they came back with some extra. After they approved the loan, they come back and asked for another $5 million in points. That's fees, just to make a loan. So I was a little upset about that. So I pulled it out, moved it across the street to another SNL, and, went ahead with the project. But meanwhile, as you know, the SNLs all went into bankruptcy. Well, by that time, I was running around with the guys that are planning on taking over the world, and I found out what they did. They would take all the assets that the SNLs had and sold it to their buddies for 25 or 30 cents on the dollar. In other words, if they bought the SNL would loan, let's say, $10 million on a big real estate project, and it was worth $30 million on it. $30 million is what everybody thought it was. The $10 million they paid for the project, and then they charged off the $20 million extra back to the FSLIC, so they covered all the losses. In other words, but that went back to the American taxpayer. Interesting.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if they're still doing that sort of thing, but now they just, amped the game up with what they're
doing. Well, sure, they just ended up the game. How many billions of dollars are they doing with AIG and the rest of them?
Right.
So all of a sudden, I was sitting here playing with a lot of these people. As I started watching them playing the game of money, I started looking at the insurance industries and all, you know, the retirement accounts. We started setting up all of that. And then everybody wants security, don't they?
Okay.
Isn't that what it is? I'm going to put the money in. I want to make sure it's secure. I want to get it out. I want to put my money in the retirement account. I want to make sure I get my money. But what they've done is set up this huge Ponzi game called the stock market. Now, you're talking about a principle. You know, the stock market works like this. If you came to me and asked for $1 million, I would go out to a bunch of people that had money or whatever it is and say, hey, I need $1 million. I got a new company. Now, we'll have an underwriter. We'll give you shares in the stock or in the company.
Mm-hmm.
So we go ahead and issue it. I give the company the $1 million, you know, less the expenses of doing it. So meanwhile, I knew exactly how much money they had, what they had. Now, their only requirement was to give accounting figures back to the people. And as an underwriter, it was my job to maintain the market. In other words, once you bought the stock, you got to have somebody be able to buy it again, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what I would do, I had several other brokers. You remember Denver was a big deal for what we call IPOs, and initial public offerings, or all the penny stocks, the old days.
Right, right.
Anyway, everybody was out here trying to get rich buying stocks because they were being manipulated. Well, once the stock has been issued, the only sales then are between them and other brokers. Has nothing to do with the company from that point on. So when you see all these stocks that are being traded in the United States right now on the S&P 500 or the Dow Jones 30, you know, that's just a list of stocks, right?
Right.
The Dow Jones, the original Dow Jones 30 stocks aren't up there anymore. For instance, U.S. Steel was one of the original Dow Jones 30. Well, when it went down, it wasn't worth anything anymore. Or like last year when all the stocks dropped down to less than $10 a share on the Dow Jones, they replace them. So when they tell you the Dow Jones is going up or down, it's a new deck of cards. How do you can tell what it really worth? You understand what the problem we're in?
Oh, yeah.
Now, in order to manipulate it even better, this is the same thing. If the stock, we look at the company, and if we don't like it, the feds say they have the money. They create it out of thin air anyway. They'll go out and buy those 100 shares of stock every day if they want to, or sell a few of them. So they have the illusion that everything's back to normal after 6 months, right?
Mm-hmm.
So everything's okay right now in the country. Do you believe that?
No.
How many people do you know out here that their companies are out really making money today?
You'd have a better idea than me on that one.
They're not. It's an all accounting nightmare, and accountants have really messed up the game at this minute. It's like AIG made a deal with a couple of the insurance companies. Well, AIG themselves went back to the underwriters in New York. In other words, the big stock brokerage firms that were putting together pension funds. Now, pension funds are another license. This is where everybody puts their money into right now. The job of the pension fund manager is to invest it at some place where it gets a 8.3% return. Now, where can you do that? So what they did was they pooled together a bunch of, let's put it this way, mortgages and things like that. People's mortgages were pooled in the bank, and they discounted them to yield that. But in order to get it so it made some sense accounting-wise, they call that a derivative. In other words, they were pooled mortgages. They didn't have the mortgage. They just had the money that was coming in to make sure that they had some way for an accountant to determine what the price is of that. They had AIG insure it. Now, that means that the AIG then took on the responsibility saying all that money is going to be good and it's going to be paid for. Now, so then all of a sudden, AIG became really rich because it was selling insurance policies. In other words, guaranteeing the money. However, there wasn't anything behind it. It's called basically a naked position. They didn't go check it out. They just took the word of what the underwriters told them. So guess what? Now all of a sudden, we have trillions of dollars worth of derivatives that are held behind all of our pension funds across the United States. Everything that people think they have, their retirement accounts, all these things, it's all blue sky. So guess what's going to come up to this country now?
Yeah, but it's not just going to be just this country. It's going to be the whole world, isn't it?
Yeah, well, they convinced foreign governments, too, to go ahead. So we got foreign governments, foreign banks, and everything else to buy this derivative pool. And the derivative pool is derived off of income, and they also sold MasterCard and Visa, and they're not talking about that. The big shopping centers always, you know, I built shopping centers. And you always got maybe a 25-year loan, but we had a 5-year call on them. In other words, an adjustable rate or call them out, because if they weren't going down. Well, most of the major shopping centers right now in the United States are in bankruptcy. I don't know if you're aware of that.
I've been hearing some of that, yes.
So the whole game is coming apart in every direction we have. Now, we have just that to look at. Now, I have to address that problem. The next problem is, in Colorado, for instance, the number one problem is we don't have enough water. Water comes from the Ogallala Aquifer in Nebraska, and it's down 50%. The government stepped in now. You can't drill a water well, as you're probably aware, without the government saying it's okay. You know, where they're looking at what they're using of the water, because downstream we're running out of it. In other words, not enough water to even grow crops right at this minute. Meanwhile, look at the population of Colorado as it's been growing, and we have all this stuff running on the Front Range and a lot of the other towns. To be, you know, what I'm looking at is what is the focus point of it? Well, meanwhile, the government itself, we got so many people working for the state within their different divisions that they have to live and they get their money off the taxes of the people. Well, if people aren't working, how can they pay their taxes?
They can't.
Then we have the other problem is that within the system, Phil Hart, who's a state representative, did a job with Aaron Russo. I don't know if you've seen the movie From Freedom Fashion, From
Freedom to Fascism. Yes, I have. Yes.
You know, Aaron Russo, well, he opened, I don't know if you know that, he opened that in Denver.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he opened the thing over there. He four-walled it. He bought the theater, and they put it out for a week, and then they shut it all down because it has too much truth in it. And in that, I talked to Aaron. He and I spent an afternoon together discussing the, you know, some of that stuff. And Phil Hart, who's in the movie right now, is currently trying to get the state of Idaho to go to what we call sound money, something backed by metal, gold and silver.
Mm-hmm.
I personally worked on that kind of a project in Nevada. We were going to have the Nevada coin bill and use silver. Silver is not mentioned in the New World Order's bank book, so according to the Constitution, you're not supposed to be able to do that, but they're working on it right now. There are several bills in several states that are trying to come along, but there are several bills in several states trying to make states what they are. This is a republic. They're trying to get them back where the state itself is totally independent of everything else. It's like Oklahoma basically said, to hell with everybody. We're going to run this as our own little country, which we basically are. Colorado should be doing the same thing. You should be your own country. The federal government can give you guidelines if they want to, but the hell with the federal government. Go on with yourself. That's what the problem is. Nobody will do that because they want to have their Social Security coming in. That's all. Money's all been borrowed. It's another promissory note from the government. The question is, the rest of the world's been providing money to us, the United States, to keep this thing going, and they're now looking at us and they'll say, wait a minute, in the United States we got 325 million people, we have in real numbers over 100 trillion in derivatives, they only publicly tell you maybe 13 or $20 million worth of derivative, $13 trillion worth of derivative debt, but they don't tell you the stuff that's due next year and the year after. It's only due this year. It's the accounting nightmare that you've got. What it amounts to is that everybody's in the hole. Nobody will want to loan a bankrupt anymore. The United States has exported all of our major manufacturing jobs or production thing. Even this last year, Hershey Candy Bar Company has moved all their plants to Mexico. Now, what does that mean?
That means they're trying to... they're trying to take us down economically, it looks like. So.
Well, the plan, of course, I sat in meetings up in Aspen when they're talking about the Plan 2000, which Kissinger said. Do you know Henry Kissinger? He's the front man for the Rockefellers, frankly. He just said that, look, the number one problem on the planet is we have too many people, and one of their programs is basically they control most of the people that have anything to do up at the top, and that is to get the population reduced in the United States. And that's the reason why you've got to keep watching the Middle East and that fire, because that was the original intent. The Plan 2000, which they put into motion, and they go to my website, nohoax.com, you can get a summary of the Plan 2000, and that the people admit what they're going to do. They actually, you can go to another website called the Georgia Guidestones and take a look at the monument they've already erected because they think they've won. There's just too few people that are getting up to do anything.
Right, and any other projects or written material, books that you put out or anything are also listed on your website, and you said it's nohoax.com?
That's correct. Okay. I put those out. Well, you wanted to add more to the things that were going on. I'm just giving you some of my background. I was asked to be the finance chairman for the election of Jimmy Carter. I sat down in meetings as they set this thing into motion. And this was, a private meeting, frankly, up in Aspen with some of the world leaders. When I found out the whole details of what was going on and a lot of the things that went on at the meeting, I decided I didn't want to be part of them anymore. So that's when basically at that point they decided they didn't want to have any part of me. So they put me out of business, or tried to put me out of business at that time. And at that point I thought, well, I'll play their game. So at that point I flew out to California. I had a house in Beverly Hills at the time, and I talked to my friends who were movie producers. They're going to make a movie to expose what their plan is. Well, I have to go along with some of the stuff that they have, but I didn't realize how drastic they are. I mean, what's the number one problem on the entire planet? I mean, we're increasing the population of the planet right now over 200,000 a day. I actually put a population clock on my website so you can see what's going on every second.
Uh-huh.
And what we're looking at is that we're at about 6.8 billion people, increasing over deaths, over 200,000 a day, or 2 million people every 10 days. That's, in other words, if you look at Denver, can you imagine Denver, a new Denver every 10 days on this planet? Look at the infrastructure necessary.
Okay, now, but that's part of what some of the people of these ruling elites are after is trying to reduce the population. You're not agreeing with their methods, I hope, or are you?
No, that's what I talked to. I dropped that. No, they're going to. Well, I sat in on the meeting, so I know what they do. They said they're going to do it by all means necessary, and that all means necessary. Get a war going, because that's a war is the best way for them to make money. I mean, if you have to look at the United States, we have never won a war. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Did you know World War II is not over? It's still, there are treaties going on. Even Japan and Russia are negotiating right now. No, we've never won a war. We have assisted things, like they shut the World War II, stopped, basically, if everybody, went home and sat down on it. But what's scheduled right now is World War III. That's what they've got scheduled up, and that's what the plan was, to follow all the biblical prophecies, and that's to get the war started in the Middle East with Israel, and maybe it's Iran. I'm not too sure which one, because they were trying to do it in Iraq. I mean, the plan was to get the war started in the year 2000. Why do you think they kept bombing Iraq so much? I mean, Hussein was CIA and our buddy. Remember, we provided them all the money to go after Iran.
Right.
So the game, what happens is the game will turn on you. If they like you, you're going to be supported. As, again, another one of Kissinger's deal, the absolute aphrodisiac is power. We'll put you in a position of power, and they'll keep you there. So now take a look at our own country. We have the best Congress money can buy. And the power, they put it up there in front because people are easily led. I mean, but this time we're being led to slaughter. And that's going to be, and it's in every way feasible at this point. They're going to collapse the economic system. They're going to start working on the population reduction. And that, again, their plan is the war starting in the Middle East, which is to spread to the United States. And they're only estimating less than 20 million Americans to be left alive. Colorado, fortunately, on the western slope is smart, because if there's no transportation and there's nothing going on, how are you going to get your food? And how many people in your community are getting together right now, getting your food stored up, getting ways in order to help each other? Because if you can't help each other, nothing's going to work. This is going to be total chaos. But that's what they planned.
And the reason behind the plan is?
Well, out of to basically, if they get the people to kill themselves, that's one of the other directions. I mean, 10 years ago, I was asked to build an enemy prisoner of war camp in downtown Las Vegas. I have a copy of the contract. I actually published it in one of our books. I had to put it up on my website so you can see it yourself. But anyway, when I got this copy, it says right on it, enemy prisoner of war camp. And the question I had was, who's the enemy, right? The enemy is everybody that wakes up and wants to go against what the government has planned for you. Now, the government is not the government that you look at. We're talking about this unelected government that's behind what's running us right now. Do you think Obama's staff and everything was elected?
No, I think they're all fixed.
Exactly. And that, in fact, there's a video out, it's called Obamanation, and tells you everybody there, and it's all fixed. And yet, like lemmings, you think that you're congressmen and everybody else, but like I say, most of them have been bought and paid for right now. And so what you're looking at is a whole system that's coming apart. The rest of the world's looking at it and say, we're not going to put up with it. I mean, I travel around the world. I just come back from Europe, and you can't use the dollar anywhere. They won't take it. You have to buy euros in advance here. I mean, you can get them in Switzerland. When you go to the Far East, for instance, in Hong Kong, the money changers in the street won't take dollars anymore. They will take MasterCard and Visa. And the guys in, this is strange, but American Express, they don't want in Hong Kong right now. I thought that was kind of unusual. And MasterCard and Visa are just merely systems that keep track of the money flow throughout the world, so we don't use money. That's to get used to this new plastic card they're going to give you, and it's called the World Cash Card.
So I can imagine with if they're going to go to this so-called green banking, which I find kind of an interesting term, but so if they do that, it appears to me that it's even going to be a bigger fiasco if they don't have any kind of exchange taking place. All they can do is just write numbers down wherever they are. Correct?
Well, that's see the Bankers Bank. That's the Bank of International Settlements in Switzerland. That keeps track of all international money that's going everywhere. There's 13 families. Basically, that's the 13 families that control the world. Then you're going back to the Rothschild Money Trust, the Cum Laude, all the people over there. They originally put up the money over here to start the Federal Reserve System, back in 1913. So, this is a long-term planning. It isn't a yesterday deal. It's been going on for a long time for world control.
Right.
So, it goes back to biblical days at the same time, Christ's crucifixion was a political thing. It wasn't much different. That's all it was. They didn't want him out there because of the lineage going. It's the whole thing becomes so corrupt when you look at it and so evil. But the problem is that they have to address what we've done, and we forgot all the rules of the universe, frankly. And we've let the free will enter into it. And we found out that the leaders found out if we can get everybody interested in amusements, i.e., you remember back in the Roman Empire, all they did was go out and have the same equivalent things that we have on right now, the football games and the cattle and all the rest of that stuff, right?
Bread and circuses.
Exactly. We're doing exactly the same thing. Get you interested in what's on the movie tonight, who made the most thing on it. Keep you entertained as they take over the world. Well, they're getting to close. The problem is that it's gone so fast that one of the analysis of it, we have basically utilized all the natural resources on the planet right now. I mean, you hear about, the oil reaching its peak. Well, you got peak oil, peak soil, peak water, peak everything. We don't have enough resources to cover what's left on the planet. Nor do we have people that will take on the responsibility which caused it in the first place.
Okay, now this part I have to question, because ultimately when I listen to some people like Lindsay Williams and some of these others, they're speaking a little bit more about the fact that it has more to do with controlling the resources, and the population sure is going to take a huge bite out of those resources if those that are at the top want to control them all.
Well, they already do control them, but when you come back to, for instance, oil, in order to get the stuff out of the ground right now, $80 a barrel is about the bare minimum, and that was the goal. In fact, 6 months ago when oil dropped down to 40, my words that they come back up to 80. Yeah, there's plenty of resources, you know, some new oil fields that they found, but we don't have the drilling rigs to drill them right now. And the cost per barrel, for instance, to get oil out of the new ones are going to run between $140 to $150 a barrel to get it out, you know, just to get it out of the ground. In other words, they're talking about the huge resources they just found in the Dakotas, right? And you're also finding people that are drilling for natural gas. Now, you're probably on natural gas, right? It comes up from New Mexico. It comes up from down from Wyoming. But did you know they're just shutting down all the rigs right now? Well, because the prices have dropped.
Okay, and that's where I'm, where if these guys control all of this, then essentially it, that it isn't necessarily that we're out of oil or that sort of thing. It's because they want to, by getting rid of the ability to get it, then that gives them a bigger ability to control the price, correct?
Well, a couple problems with that assumption. I'll give you an idea. If you look at the oil fields, for instance, in Venezuela, you look at the ones that are in Mexico. Mexico, their own government's admitting that they're going to be out of oil in 2 years. Now, we get about 30% of our oil from Mexico or Canada. It splits back and forth every month. We either get 30% from Canada or we get 30% from Mexico. Well, Mexico imports 40% of its oil from South America. Now we got two wild cards. A country called China moved in 6 months ago and has bought the next 3 years 100% of the production out of Venezuela. Do you think we're going to get any oil?
Yeah, but don't we also sell our oil in Alaska to Japan?
That's right. You have to do that because of the Alaskan oil. It has a high sulfur content, and you have to have special refineries. That's how Japan has actually done everything. In other words, they're making it. So the oil that comes from Alaska, which is on the big tankers, go over there. They're processed there, and then we can get the sweet oil, and that's from well, it comes out of Iraq and Iran. That's the better oil that we can use. But as far as we're coming, we can, out of the United States, we got everybody running all of it. Our pumps are going. They're doing water flooding. I don't know if you're familiar with that. I used to drill oil wells, too. If you remember in Denver, we had a company called King Resources. That was John King. And I was a vice president of one of his companies, and we were drilling wells. And this, you know, I went all through all these different games of making money. And the wells would last for a while, and then we'd run out of oil. Then we do water flooding. We'd pump steam into them to get more oil out of the soil. Meanwhile, we're causing pollution no matter which way we go. For instance, an airplane that leaves Denver, Colorado at Stapleton, or not Stapleton, but at, you know, at
DIA.
At the airport. Yeah. When you go to DIA, if you take an airplane that leaves there and it flies nonstop to Miami, for instance, it takes 8 tons of fuel. Did you know that?
No.
8? Now, because they don't tell you this. See, they ways keep people asleep. They have no idea of calculations on stuff. It's like when you pick up a can of Coke, you know, for instance, and it says it's got 40 grams of sugar. How do you translate that back so you can understand what it is? Because the person doesn't know. How many grams is in a teaspoon of sugar? Do you know?
No.
See, you don't be paying. I will tell you, it's 5 grams. So if you go that's typical, that's 8 teaspoons of sugar in a can of Coke. Now, why are people getting vertically challenged? You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. No.
Okay, now it's the same thing. In the airplanes, they buy the fuel by the pounds, or, you know, how are they going to, how many pounds of thing are. Well, a pound of fuel runs out to be about 6 pounds, roughly. A pound of fuel translates to about 6 gallons.
Okay.
So now all of a sudden you start looking at how much fuel, and the airplanes don't burn all that fuel, but we have 5,000 in the air, between 30 and 40,000 feet every hour in the United States. There's 25,000 roughly around the planet. Now that's running between those guidelines, they call it, between 30 and 40,000 feet everywhere because of the air currents. They measure everything down so they can go very far, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what we're doing is we're polluting the air. the water itself is polluting. Colorado needs water. Of course, it brings it in from Nebraska and, or bringing it down. Even Las Vegas gets its water for all these casinos that you see, all these beautiful waterfalls and stuff. That all comes from Canada. It's piped, it's trucked down on trucks. It's so unbelievable how much is taken care of. And so you have me on the air trying to tell you and your guest what's going on. Meanwhile, let's go back. I'll digress a little bit because we'll bring in other extraneous things. In 1958, I was at Edwards Air Force Base. That's the Air Force Research and Development Center. And one morning, I did the post-flight inspection on the X-15. That's the forerunner of the space shuttle. And it lands out in the dry bed or out in the desert. Now, it's nothing more than a rocket on skids. But when I finished doing the inspection, I was kind of curious. There was two hangars I hadn't been into, and I went inside one of the hangars. Inside of it, there's a round craft, that's all I can describe to you, a disc, you know, silver in color, about 30 feet across. I mean, I'm 10 feet away from it. It was just something different. But I've been working on a lot of strange things. Anyway, I come back and asked my CO if I could work on it, and he said it was an ion-powered craft, ION, powered craft designed by Sikorsky for use in outer space. I said, great, when can I work on it? And he says, you can't. It's still a civilian project. So I, you know, walk away from that. That's Edwards is a place where the civilian contractors build vehicles, and then they turn it over to the Air Force for testing. Just to give you an idea, at the time I was there, there was about 800 airmen and 25,000 civilians. That's a huge base. So it's about as a crow flies, 100 miles north of Los Angeles. Anyway, that evening when I come back to my my room, I happened to be running around, or one of my friends was the base photographer. I said, hey, give me some pictures of the round craft. And he said, you saw it? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, what did they tell you? And I told him, and he said, that's not true, George. I said, what do you mean? And he proceeded to show me pictures of the spacecraft. I'm 10 feet away from that. That's okay. But the pictures he showed me of the two dead aliens got my attention. I mean, they were, you know, similar to the ones that you see in the movies, you know, the little grays.
Uh-huh.
It was similar. They were slightly different. Anyway, I think I might have put them up on my website, as a matter of fact. I know they are on my first video. At any rate, I was then a little upset. It isn't a question of I didn't believe that there's a possibility of life in outer space, but why did my commander lie to me? I mean, I was cleared for top secret. I thought I was a good guy, right? So anyway, I went back down and asked my commander why he gave me that story, and he said, look, when the government, first thing he did was remind me of the implications of my top secret clearance. Second thing he said, look, when the government's ready to tell the truth about UFOs and ETs, they will. Until then, you know, stick to your story. So I did. I didn't say another word about it. But I built a house in Aspen in 1984, and the housekeeper that we had, had this incredible color picture books called UFO Contact from the Pleiades. And in it were pictures of basically the same thing I saw at Edwards. Now I got my curiosity up. So at that time, I had all the adult toys. I had five airplanes, you know, out at Jeffco, you know where that is, out by Boulder.
Right.
Anyway, I had all everything that you can need. Anyway, I decided I want to go find out for myself. So I flew down and I talked to this couple in Phoenix who said that they were investigating a man in Switzerland by the name of Billy Meyer, who claimed to be in contact with beings from the star system, the Pleiades, who said that they engineered planet Earth for 500 million people, and they gave me a lot of other stuff. And I said, well, I don't know anything about all that. I do know for sure that those pictures are real. So anyway, I said, what can I do to help you kids? And so what they said, we need more money to publish the books. I said, not a problem. I said, I'll tell you what I do. I'll loan you the money to publish the books, but here's my requirement. When you sell them, I want my money back, because I'm out building shopping centers and office buildings and restaurants and stuff. I don't want to be bothered. But I, you know, here I'm going to help them out and get something out I thought the government should have come out with a long time before. Anyway, after about 90 days, they sent me the accounting, and they'd received at that time three times the amount of money I gave them. But I didn't get any check, so I was really upset. So I called them on the phone and I says, where's my money? And they said, well, we found out who you are. You don't need it. And I said, that's not the way things work. So I went down. I filed suit against them. But meanwhile, same time, I'm like, they had shared with me hundreds of pages of documents of communication with the extraterrestrials. It's unbelievable. So I decided, well, I just grabbed there again. I just grabbed the next plane, unannounced, flew over to Switzerland to find out for myself. I mean, this was, had to be the most phenomenal story in the planet, right?
Mm-hmm.
You would think so. Anyway, I went to Zurich, grabbed an air. We rented a car, and my wife and I. It's about a 45-minute drive outside of Zurich, a little town called Hinterschmidt-Rudi, or behind Schmidt-Rudi. Anyway, goes knocks on the door, and a young lady answered, and she says, her name was Bruni. She introduced herself. And I said, I'm George Green. I put the money up for the movies that are being made on this thing. And I said, I put the money up for the publishing of your books. She says, we never heard of you. And I said, well, that's kind of strange. She says, by the way, I'm not allowed to introduce you to Billy. And I said, well, I just put the money up. I like to know. I think his story is so phenomenal, we'll get out to the world. I said, the buck stops here. Anyway, she went back, and I said, you go back and tell Billy who I am. After about 10 minutes, she came back, and she said, Mr. Green, I'm sorry. You know, Shirley MacLaine was here about 3 months ago, and she promised to help us, and nothing has happened. And I said, well, I can understand that. And she said, also, all Americans are crooks. They come over here and take all of our pictures and all of our material, and they don't do anything. And I said, well, I can understand that, too. I said, I'm suing the guy that claims to have the rights to your story. So anyway, she said, well, I'm sorry. I said, okay. I said, I'm going to head off to Innsbruck, Austria. I said, I'll make a vacation out of this, and it's late in the afternoon. Where's the closest hotel? So she told me. We went over and checked in the hotel. Next morning, knocking on my door, here's Bruni. She said, Mr. Green, I got a message for you. And she handed me this 2-page message, and it was signed by Quetzal, who happened to be the Palladian commander who was in contact with Billy. And in it was things about me that nobody could know. Anyway, we were invited over to the their compound. And for the next week, I got my mind blown. And it gave me a whole new understanding of who and what we are, where we come from, and a much bigger picture. Now, they're monitoring us. I mean, you're down there. You got a clear sky tonight, I hope. Anyway, look up at the stars that are strobing, red, blue, and green. These are huge spacecraft that are monitoring planet Earth because we're getting ready for the ending of a big cycle. And it's a natural cycle. It's about every 26,000 years. And this is what we call the end beginning of a new cycle coming around. And during this period of, they're hoping, out of the chaos, and that's how the universe basically works, out of the chaos of what's coming up, we're going to create something new. They're monitoring everything that's going on, and the messages I have are just unbelievable in details about the upcoming war and what's going to happen in the United States. So you can just kiss the United States off. Yourself, Colorado's going to exist. I'm not too sure about the number of people in there because of the eastern slope. I mean, you know, everything that's in Denver along the Front Range. Because you just got too many people, we don't have enough resources, everything has to be trucked in or trained in, and you know the story.
Well, when you're talking about that, you're talking about looking at it on a universal universe type situation, and yet at the same time you're talking about a corrupt elite that are they in on it with these guys, or what is going on here that they're looking at one thing and one's looking at the other?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, there's a group of the elite that were in contact with the ETs, and the ETs were giving them information because they were trying to direct them. The extraterrestrials basically have engineered us. We're engineered beings. I mean, if you really look at the book of Genesis, that was basically if you read the Illuminush and the other books, you'll find out it was pre-biblical times is how they put this thing, and they give you some history of where we come from. In the book of Genesis, for instance, it gives you a talk about the gods coming down and mating with the women. They were redesigning the indigenous groups that were on the planet at this time from previous times. The planet Earth, it turns out, from their story, and I'm getting verification. I travel around the world to do it. It appears that it's pretty close to being true that we've been around for thousands of years, billions of years, as a matter of fact, of humans on this planet, and it's always been used as a prison planet. I mean, when I flew to Japan, the most ancient documents over said they came from a boat from the sky. Now, that's how they would identify it. If you read Ezekiel, you know, Ezekiel's trying to describe a craft when it says a wheel within a wheel. When I was in China, we're over Xi'an, you know where the terracotta figures are. they have pyramids over there, and their documents come basically say that they come from the star system Lyra. So all of a sudden, I'm getting all that in the blacks in Africa, the Dogon tribe, which means star people. See, we got all these things that are all coming together from all over the planet. When I flew to Australia, the Australians, the Aborigines, were there originally. They were part of the original ones from the last go-round on the planet. So we basically go through cycles. We build it up, and we're crushing it back down again. We're going to be another, if you look at it, the ending of the cycle, like Atlantis and Lemuria, we're about ready to do that. Because Atlantis and Lemurians had all the technology we do.
Okay, now, but if this is, you're looking at this, this is a whole nother aspect of the information that you're also trying to convey about these guys that are sitting around in these meetings like in Aspen and places where they're trying to bring down and create World War III and control the monetary system, and we may not have a place to be, you know, they may try to take over all the, put us all in prison camps and that sort of thing, or kill off the population, or get us to kill off ourselves, whatever. And so where's the timing on this, and what is going on? You know, I mean, how do you assimilate it all?
Well, it's a little hard to assimilate it all. That's the reason why you asked me on as a guest, and it's hard to put it together just on a radio program. When I go out and do my lectures, I try to get you visual information and just to ponder it. You don't have to believe what I have to say. What I want you to do is challenge me for, you know, information. Go to my website. Read the handbook for the new paradigm. It's up there free. You can download it.
Okay.
Or, you know, are we,
okay,
we
I
have
guess.
All these things.
Okay, I guess what I'm trying to ask, though, is which one are you addressing first? Is the one where these guys from the extraterrestrials are telling us one thing's fixing to go on? Is that going to happen before or after? Or are you addressing the fact that, you know, our money may, you know, take a big, you know, be worthless soon, and we may be having to look for, you know, food and things to, you know, support ourselves in just this environment?
Well, let's put it this way. From my understanding, you know, when I do my lectures, the first thing people do, they go to their purse or their billfold. They want to protect their where they're living, their standard of living. That's the first thing people do. The second thing that we have to look at is, you know, that's their money. Well, I've been well trained in money, so I know what that game's all about. I mean, I had everything from banks to the whole game. So now I know what that's all about. Now the next step is then, what's the problem? It is that we have population and we also have to feed people. But the politics, and politics, and I tell this in my lectures, is two words. Poly means many, and ticks are bloodsuckers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what we have is a bunch of politics or politicians that are out here trying to be in control, and what they're going to do, because of power, absolute power corrupts absolutely. When we put these people up in power, at the very top, they get used to this life. I mean, all I have to do is serve a term, you know, being a state senator, or not a state senator, but the federal senators, and they have a lifetime salary forever, covered by their own insurance plan, by their own health plan. Everything is all covered by them, for them. So it's a good position, and they can go down there beholden to the people that put them into office. And that goes back to the money game, isn't it? There's very few of them that will stand up against all of that, because they can't. It's all controlled by the money thing. So now we come back to, how do we get people so they understand we're going to be back trading again? The ETs said, wake up, number one, who and what you are, which is, in real reality, nothing more than a spirit inside this body, or rent-a-wreck, I call it. In the guys that are planning on taking over the world consider you an expendable container. Today they've updated the verbiage on it, or the clarification. You're nothing more than a human resource. In other words, if you go down and apply for a job, it's in the human resource division, isn't it?
Yes.
See,
I found that interesting terminology too.
Well, it's all terminology. You can, you know, the guys up there, they don't care if they get rid of you. You're just, at a certain age, you're considered a useless eater. So they're planning on, like I say, East Coast, you can consider it pretty much gone. I mean, there are just too many people, and there are not enough resources to make sense. And it's so corrupt. It's just bad news. And it's going to be coming apart. It's already coming apart because of the weather situations that are happening. These are all things that are happening that I don't know how to tell people about this stuff. It's just there's too many other things that are happening because it all fits together eventually. What it comes down to is an understanding on it. It comes down to being this spirit, which is a connection of the creation itself. We are an extension of that creation. We are part of it. As what's the creation? What's its job? Well, and if you read the handbook, it's for people to wake up to who and what they are, which we are a part of the whole. And I don't know how you want to treat it, whether you treat it as God or however you want to do it. The creation is trying to find out what it is. I even asked the extraterrestrials, because I did become in contact with them, what's above the creation? And their answer back to me was, there's still mysteries for them. So now you and I are in an interesting game, because what we can understand, and there's a lot of details that are coming out in all different places about different groups of extraterrestrials that are visiting the planet. I mean, over in eastern Colorado, I was out to one of the farmers. It was in the Denver Post, as a matter of fact, where one of the craft landed and drilled holes down. Now, all they're doing, the extraterrestrials are taking soil samples, air samples, water samples. They're keeping track of the ending of this thing. In other words, it's an engineered planet. They want to see what we're doing to it so they can try to fix it back up if necessary when we get rid of most of the parasites on the planet. And that's basically what we've become.
Okay, now let me go ahead and say this is KHEN LPFM Radio, 106.9 Salida, Colorado. We're community-supported radio. And the views expressed on this program are those of myself and of my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHEN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And this evening, my guest is George Green, and we're getting into numerous aspects of what the problems going on in this world and beyond. So, George, go ahead.
I think that's a good summation you just did. It's not a problem. This is part of how the creation works. And hopefully we come into an understanding of the laws of the universe. And it's not the ones that the biblically ones, those have been corrupted so bad. In other words, all I have to do is change a couple words, for instance, like the so-called Ten Commandments. All they have to do is change a couple words in them to make them different. That's like, you remember, one of the commandments, thou shalt not kill.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that one?
Right.
You know what the real one is?
Uh-uh.
Thou shalt not murder thy fellow man in thought or deed. Now think about that. What you think makes manifest, right? If on John 1 it says in the beginning there was the word, that's not correct. In the beginning it was thought. Words are just thought out loud. When you pray, you put out thought. When you meditate, you're hoping to receive thought back. The ones that learn how to reach a point of being in balance, and that's part of the key, that's one of the fourth law, is coming back into balance in the thing within your body to understand who and what you are. And that's the reason why we have the books that I've agreed to publish from the extraterrestrials. That's the handbook, Embracing Realm of Becoming. If you read those books a couple of times, you too can be in contact and be what we call part of the ground crew. That'll be the people that will assist in the transition of the planet to begin something new. We know what didn't work. I mean,
okay,
it didn't take a rocket scientist to look and see that, right?
Right. Now, when you're getting into, when you're talking to these ETs or whatever, how are you contacting them? Is this in physical form? Are they seeing face-to-face? How is it that you're making
Well, originally that was it. But when I left Switzerland, I come back over to the United States, I was trying to find a way to break the contract between Billy over there and the people in Arizona. So I went to my attorneys in Beverly Hills, and I'll tell you, I leave a real-life X-file. In my attorney's office, we set up an agreement that I would, fly Billy over here to the States, and we'd have a hearing in front of a judge and get rid of the contract so I could go ahead with my agreement to publish information or help the ETs get the information out. But during that time, when we called Billy on the phone, he says, remember, I showed you pictures of California being destroyed by an earthquake. Well, that's coming up pretty quick, so that's a very physical thing. And it's going to happen before the war starts. Well, we know they're trying to get the war started right now, and I'm just trying, you're asking for some timing. So that's any minute now, California. I moved out of California. I shut everything down. Anyway, Billy says, I'm not leaving Switzerland. I'm safe here, and I have three kids. And I said, okay, fine. You're going to have to let the extra, we're going to have to find another way, or we'll let the extraterrestrials find another way. Well, we left our office in Beverly Hills, and I'm going down 405. That's the road that goes down by the airport. And at that time out in California, I had a little SL convertible, a little Mercedes.
Uh-huh.
They had one of their beam ships, one of their flying saucers, you want to call it, or a little beam ships, follow us in broad daylight for about an hour. I mean, I have to understand, my whole life changed upside down. All of a sudden, I'm looking at extraterrestrials, I'm looking at spacecraft, I'm doing all these things, and they're following us around. Well, they also communicate. They can communicate like you and I are talking, but primarily they telepathically communicate with you. How that works is kind of like you and I are talking right now using our phone system, right? Or you have a cell phone. Well, they communicate with us basically without the cell phone. That's their telepathic thing. When I flew to Spain, for instance, I was talking to Dr. Antonio Rivera, who's a direct contact with a group of ETs who look just like us, but they don't have vocal cords. Total communication is telepathic. In other words, they can look at you. You have to give them permission to do that because you're really looking at mine. And our government is teaching our pilots and stuff on how to do that. I don't know if you're aware of that right now.
Yeah, well, that's the part that I was going to get to, is because I understand that there's a number of projects that involve things that you're speaking about. And so how do you know that you're not dealing with our government as opposed to, creating these creatures or projects? You see what I'm saying?
Well, first of all, that's a discernment thing. What I've learned at is a lot of discernment. It's cost me lots of money to find out, because there's groups of ETs that are just playing with us. There's groups of people on this planet that play with us, mm-hmm. And even the government doesn't care about people putting pictures out about UFOs and letting them talk to them, because then the people won't know. It's like, the crop circles. They're all over the planet, right? They're making them everywhere. I mean, you saw the movie Signs, maybe, or you've seen mm-hmm. some of the other ones. But the crop circles have two purposes. One of them, to make people ponder what they are. Now, of course, they discredit it, and they say, well, these two farmers went out there and do that. But if I got my video, one of my bidders is called The Big Picture. It's 4.5 hours, where I show you the crop circles being made in just a few seconds. You can actually see them being made.
Uh-huh.
And so that gives you something else to look at. And now, the first thing is to make people ponder, but the real purpose on it is to keep the planet stabilized. And give us a message at the same time. The planet is due to flip on its axis again. I mean, you probably heard about that from many different sources. They're talking about the planet flipping. Well, if they can keep the planet from doing that prematurely, or in other words, stabilize the planet, hey, all the power. Now, they're allowed to do that. That's one of the things. They really can't interfere with what's going on. There's a group of ETs said that since they engineered us, or they made us, they do interfere. Then there's a group, even in Colorado. Remember the old days when you had the cattle mutilations in southern Colorado?
Right, right. It's just south of here.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, that was a group of ETs finding out a little bit more about them. Now there's a group of ETs that consider us cattle. So we have to look at, there's all kinds of things, putting together the pieces of it. We have people that do that to people. So, they just experiment with them. I mean, that's what they're doing. Medical doctors are medical practice. They're practicing on us, right?
Right.
Everything you have to look at and be suspect of everything. Because where did the medical doctor get its training? And its training was all orchestrated by either the insurance companies or the schools that have a certain formation. The doctor that goes out and finds out what's really going on is generally ostracized. From finding out that you don't have to be on aspirin, for instance. How many people that are aspirin deficient?
Okay.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I never thought of it that way.
we can cover up the problem. What is the problem right here today? You want to go find out what caused it in the first place. How come we have you know, doctors come out and says, you know, what kind of blood type are you, for instance? We know this is a random show. You want to get all kinds of things for people to start thinking about it. But the truth is, people have different blood types. Don't you think blood type makes a difference on what kind of food you should be eating?
Yeah, that's a theory that I've definitely heard about, yes.
Okay, well, then, yeah, well, there's doctors who'll give you plenty of evidence that that does work on it. I went out to California, and I funded a bunch of doctors who were doing blood tests. You know, where you come in and give your blood after a night, you know, basically you don't eat for a day, and they come in and they take your blood, they're going to tell you what's going on. Well, I funded that program for a bit until I found out more into details, because it's all subjective, right?
Mm-hmm.
In 3 hours, your blood is changing around. You maybe had a Coke, had a cup of coffee. All of a sudden, your metabolism changes, and that's going to change what's in your blood. It obviously will come up if you have some kind of disease of the blood. That will show automatically, right?
Okay.
Okay, it's the same thing. As you know, I told you that my dad was in the meat packing business, and I worked on the killing floor. You know, we killed, and I personally killed many animals. But here's the oddball thing. Didn't we had government inspectors, right? These are veterinarians that came in and inspected the animals. Do you realize that in our place, we didn't kill that many, maybe 40 to 45 head every hour?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, in 90 seconds, we would kill an animal, and 90 seconds later, its carcass would be in the cooler. Now, you tell me how much the inspector could really check to see for any kind of disease.
I guess it doesn't sound like they had much time at all.
They don't. Well, they look for major things like lumps or whatever. You look, you know, the first thing you do is you look at all the offal. In other words, all the organs and stuff, and see if they're diseased. That would automatically show up. But as far as the rest of the thing, unless something shows up, the idea from the doctor's standpoint, I'm not talking about the veterinarians and the government, when they said USDA inspected. And remember, this is on today. Nothing's changed.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is that when you take the meat, regardless of what's in it, you're going to cook it and you'll kill the pathogens. Is that necessarily true?
I don't think so, but I'm not an expert on it, so.
Well, no, but I mean, just be remember the universe, as they say, is logical. It may be mysterious, but don't make it mystical. Now, the other thing, like yourself, what do? You check out women. What's the biggest problem that they talk about today? Having mammograms, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what does mammograms do? What do mammograms do? Don't they? That's X-rays. What do X-rays do? They cause cancers.
Right.
You can get other. There's other methods of doing it. It's, you know, magnetic resonance, the new sound techniques to go in to check if they have anything. And believe it or not, most of the women that have the tight bras on them, what that does is back up the lymph tissues. And when the lymph, when it backs it up then it causes these cancers. Now what happens? We're creating all these problems with ourselves, not understanding how the systems work.
Yeah, that is an interesting point, yes.
No, I'm worried. Look, I cut open lots of animals. When I wanted to grow up, I thought, well, this is going to be a good deal. I want to become a veterinarian. And then I started looking at all the things. It's probably the better doctor to be, because the patients don't yell at you, right? Then you get paid, you know, you go look at it. The people will spend more money on their dog than they will on themselves. So and most of the other doctors, they pick a peculiar, you know, practice of whatever they're doing. One of them's going to be a specialized, you know, in one system or other. And they all set these games up. They go to a school, and the pharmaceutical companies give them all the drugs to cover up all their mistakes.
Okay.
It's an unbelievable mess. Everything that you can do. So what are we? A big experimental thing right now. Planet Earth, we're just one big experiment right now from the creational standpoint. But now we're coming to the ending of the cycle, and now's the time to take on the responsibility to find out what I just got you saying. All these things we're talking about, go investigate it. Whatever triggers your mind. And it's going to take you a long time to do everything. I live my experience. You know, I run around with these guys. I have friends that are doctors. I have friends that are in the... You know, used to be in the CIA and the FBI and all these things. And I want to know why they think the way they think, what they're doing, and what's the big picture. And so the big picture is basically the Plan 2000, and I keep myself monitoring on it. Isn't the question of the banking. That's all going away right now. That's a given. What's coming down now is it's coming pretty fast. Now, they're way behind schedule. Now, their goal was they want to follow Jose Argelis's plan, you know, the plan the 2012 deal, uh-huh. You know, these prophecies about all that. Well, that dates are off, just so you know, but that's what they wanted to have this thing completed by the year 2012. Well, I think this is 2010. That's only 2 years from now. Well, they're way behind schedule, so tell me what they're going to do. It's got to be escalated pretty quick. So you're asking for timing again? I watch every day what's going on in the Middle East, because that's where the plans are, to follow the biblical prophecies. Because remember, they wrote that. They rewrote that.
So in other words, you're saying that it's a self-fulfilling prophecy then, that the Bible's
sure.
Okay.
Oh, the Bible means group of books. Remember, they assembled this 300 years after the fact. And so you start looking at how did they assemble it and who did it and whatever. Even if you read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you know, the four, that's in the New Testament, they don't agree on where even the man Jesus, which is wasn't his real name, his name was Emmanuel, but they don't even agree where he was born.
Okay, now in your movie, the big picture, whatever, you were talking, I believe, to some scholar that was involved with some of these things, correct?
And that's correct.
And so, I mean, obviously, give a little bit more background on that.
Well, for instance, what we just talked about, Dr. Walter Moyer, who was on the team of doctors at the Denver Museum. Remember that game out there down at Denver Museum of Natural History?
Mm-hmm.
There was a team of doctors that went over to the Middle East and helped dig up the Hammurabi text of the Dead Sea Scrolls. And, you know, he came back to me when I was a kid. I was invited to go with him over there. And they were digging up this stuff, and he says, you know, the story they talk about Emmanuel and the crucifixion, he says it wasn't what they present in the churches. Well, then I says, which church? And they said, well, why don't you go check it out? So I just made another deal. I decided to go to each one of the different churches that were right around, and I said, my God, there's 100 different churches, and they all have different interpretations. Then I went down and looked at the Bibles that they had, and every one of them's a different Bible, right? And then I said, why does everybody use the King James? So then I researched King James. I actually got documents. I have the whole history of King James. It's a question, you know, they say we'll use the King James Version, right?
Right.
What does version mean? Version means somebody's opinion, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how did he do that? Well, King James was, frankly, he was the bastard child of Queen Mary. You know, he lived in Scotland. And he didn't know who his father was, but basically they kept him away from everything. And he was a real weirdo. I put up his background and his story up on my website, too, who was King James. But the question is, just to give you a comparison, would you accept the Bible that was like a Bill Clinton version?
No, I've definitely heard that King James has some a questionable background as to why you would be following his version.
But how did he do it? Well, he didn't have control of his people because they knew who he was. So what he did is he had one of the most learned people in the world, Francis Bacon, at that time.
Mm-hmm.
He got 50 guys, and they spent 3.5 years creating the King James Version. And they took out some of the books that were in the Bible. The Book of Enoch is real interesting. Enoch has got all kinds of stuff about what's going on right now. But and he was involved with ETs, and he even tells you in his story. So that was kind of fun. Well, anyway, I started looking at that, and everybody has their interpretation, and they got, you know, whether it's the Mormons and the golden tablets and all that. And then I just come back from Ecuador down there where they have the gold tablets, you know, from the extraterrestrials. So it's really fascinating to put together the pieces to find out how people are easily led or looking for somebody to come save them. That isn't what Christ even said. He said, what I do, you can do, and greater. What you sow, you shall reap.
Okay.
So, you know, that's just a matter of fact. So the religion has become an opiate of the masses. So then you start examining the religions of other parts of the world. Now, in China, they don't have one. You probably know that. And there's 1.3 billion people there. And I spent some time in China. You have no idea how it is to live with that type of an organization. Then you start studying the Islam, and you start studying the rest of the passages of these people. from different places, and then you find out how the controls are setting up and what we're considered from some of the other people. There are people that consider us cattle. And, you know, there's a word out called goyim. Are you familiar with that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It means cattle, doesn't it?
Well, I was familiar with the word, but I guess I didn't know the definition of it.
Well, as I say, you hear it, but it goes right over your head. But anyway, that's where we're at. And the people that are a little older than I am and a little bit wiser, and there are a lot of young people that are really smart right now. And, I bless them for going out of the box, so to speak. When I went mind schooling, I always got out of the box because I could really, I could obtain a lot of information and put it all together. I didn't spend a lot of time in school, in regular school, in the classes, because after 2 days, I said, just give me the exam. I'd read the book and then go about my business. I spent a lot of my time in libraries. I was the old days they called a nerd. Remember that? I was a school nerd. You know, my older brother was the rah-rah guy. He was the president of the football team or, all that kind of stuff. But I was into studying.
Okay, now how does your...
Finding out what all that stuff is.
Okay, now with the direction that you've gone, how does your family deal with that? Do they accept a lot of this, what you've done, or do they avoid it?
No. I have a son who's a nuclear physicist.
Uh-huh.
And he's a senior engineer with Bechtel, and we talk a lot about some of this stuff. Now, he spent 3.5 years in Russia in the secret cities, where they found out that all their nuclear stuff, we basically financed, and they're about 12 years ahead of us, just so you know. We talk about this stuff. Since they were not directly involved with, like, the extraterrestrials, they have my material. But remember, free will. I have a daughter that lives just outside of Washington, D.C., she doesn't want to hear that stuff because I brought her up. I spoiled my kids, frankly. I made enough so they got to travel around the world, do all kinds of stuff. And she's a professional shopper, if you want to look at it. But she's coming down to that point because her husband just got laid off. Now my son, who's a senior engineer, he had to start laying people off, and now he's an engineer with one of the major firms in the world. I mean, big time. And he's talking about the same thing. He's aware of that. Now, my son-in-law, who is with my daughter, he attended one of the meetings up in Aspen. The Aspen Institute is one of the smart places. That's where a lot of they know what's going on. Anyway, he attended meetings, and other than updating the nomenclature, it's still on. In other words, everything's going. And I'm not there anymore. I don't worry about all that stuff. And they don't worry about me. You know why? They think they've won.
You know, I was wondering, some of the wording and stuff that I see written out there, at times it does make it look as though they have made themselves think that they've won. But I see that also as kind of part of their psychopathy, because I view a lot of them as psychopaths. Do you?
Well, no, not necessarily. There's a few psychopaths that I was involved with them when you're looking at it, but these people are very logical, very directed, in what their motivation is. They logically put together the pieces and say people they can't lead themselves. They gotta be led. So they fall on the premises what the history has shown. And the history has shown most people won't take on the responsibility. Very few. Let's look in the United States. The Indians told us all the stuff about it. Take care of the land, it'll take care of you. Our farmers recognize all this, but they've been motivated by small companies like a Monsanto, right, to use their products in there to make either the crops go faster or genetically modified or whatever they do so they can maintain it. Now we're down to the point where there's very few farmers or, having all this heavy equipment providing the food for us, and the food is not even edible at this point. So there, I'm looking at a lot of changes that are happening, and the leaders that are up at the top, they're aware of this. When I was in Washington, D.C., I mean, it's right in front of you. It's amazing what these people do. They look at the people that march on the streets in Washington just as rebel, just rabble going down the street. If you go, if you're one of the tourists that go down there, go across the street from the White House. I tell everybody, look at this, and it's hard to believe. you're looking at the White House. The next building to it is called the West Wing. You're probably familiar with this.
Uh-huh.
And what's the next building? The next building is a huge edifice. It's called the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve's a private bank right next to the White House. That's got to tell you a clue, right? And what's the next building to that? The Internal Revenue Service, the collection agency for the Federal Reserve. And the next building after that is the FBI, the investigative group, in order to find out so they can support this. I mean, we're right in front of you. You can see it if you're there, but they don't put the pieces together because they think they're an autonomous group and they're out there for the best good of the people.
Yeah, I've never heard anybody put it that way on the way they lined up those buildings, since they've usually got you looking at other buildings.
Well, you look across the street at the new museum and stuff, right? That's good looking. They got great museums, and then you go look at all these other stuff. But if you look closely, you can see how our forefathers that put together our country were all Masons. I also put that up on my website, so you can read it yourself.
But wasn't Maltese Tongue a Mason as well?
Sure.
Okay, all right.
But there's nothing wrong with the Masons within their thing, but there are, again, this ego thing. When you get up to a certain point, then they start looking at their little secret groups behind the secret groups on it, you know.
Well, the reason why I brought that up is because you said, you know, the Chinese didn't have the Bible or whatever, but if they have a tie-in with the Masons, then there may be the thread that may tie them together.
Well, remember, that's all these different groups started. When I was over there recently, you know, the Chinese, the military shared some stuff with me. They said, look, it's 5,000 years, it's our turn to run the world. And when the chairman over there told Obama, basically, you don't know how many nuclear bombs we have. Well, we know what the other ones have, right? We got India has them, Pakistan has nuclear bombs, all kinds of places have this nuclear energy. Iran wanted to reprocess their nuclear waste. Now, isn't that unbelievable? The United States does not reprocess its waste uranium?
Yeah, but my understanding, talking to one of the military people that was involved with some of the cleanup in Iraq, that they were shipping it over here now.
Nope. Yeah, well, no, that's not true. They were shipping over the expendable, the metal findings and stuff, but we're not reprocessing any of it. We send it over to France, or we send it, you know, other places. Russia reprocesses there, France reprocesses there, but we don't do it. I mean, I had people just a few months ago call me from Alamogordo. They were all upset because we were going to try to burn radiation. Can you believe that?
Okay, but I'm not saying they're reprocessing. I just was saying they were bringing it over here. So I don't know if
we have plenty here already. Rest assured, it's all over the place.
Uh-huh.
And there are processes that are available. In the United States, we don't process the ore coming out of the ground for gold or silver right now. Did you know that? In Colorado, or any of the miners, if they go up there and they're mining gold or silver or anything, all the ore is sent to Mexico, Canada, China, or Switzerland for processing. We don't have anybody bringing out anything. We get, after they get through processing, they send it over to Johnson Matthey.
Oops, what happened here now? Let me go ahead and put something on here. Something happened to the call, so I'll have to call him back. Just a second here.
Are we okay?
Yeah. I think we've got you back here. You hear me fine? Okay, there we
I'm
go.
I'm fine.
Okay. All right. The Skype just dropped the call, so sometimes that just happens.
Well, it's all electronics. That's what today's all about, you know. I guess what's going to happen when they do a EMP wave and they wipe out all of the communications. That's coming up.
Right. Well, I guess your whole purpose is about getting out information, and I guess what I'm trying to ascertain from what you're speaking about, is it about, you know, what these people in these organizations of elites are going to do, or what are you really looking at a bigger picture and really preparing for that bigger picture? Because it doesn't sound like your family's looking in that direction. So are you just, am I interpreting that right, or?
They have the information because but also they have the same problem. They got to support their family. They got kids. They got to do all the same thing, and they haven't had the ability to do what I have done. They have the information, so I'm not saying that they're not going to do something. I don't know what they're going to do at this point. All I can do is like the same thing. Give you the information out there. You're free to do what you want to with it. And the same thing with my own kids. Are they standing in line? No, they're expecting dad to have a place for them to run. I told them they might not be able to make it over here. I mean, look at the airlines right now. All the controls and stuff they're making on it, they're getting ready. And if we really look at that, that's just another way to, and that's only one part of the deal, is to get people registered and set down and see whether you're on the list. But there's a lot of terrorists that come over the border all the time right now from Mexico or Canada, or just come on board on ships. How do you determine all this stuff? They're aware of it, I guess.
Well, you know, because I mean, I've been trying to follow some of this information for 4 or 5 years, at least in the aspect of what the globalists have been planning. I mean, just south of us, you know, one of the major players is Maurice Strong, and he was talking, you know, he's pretty much over in China working with those people, and speaks of bringing these developed countries down to third world status. Correct? Or are you familiar with him?
That's correct. Sure. Yeah. They want to have the few elite. Remember, we got 13 families controlled. You can break it down to, you know, I originally published a book about 10 years ago, I guess 14 years ago, The Committee of 300, The Conspirators Hierarchy, the 300 families. But, you know, it's all, it doesn't make a difference. They're all changing. I currently got the new list of all the interlocking board of directors in the United States, the members of the CFR, the Trilaterals, and the Bilderbergers. Well, if you see all their connections, then you can understand how they control everything that we're doing in this planet. And I may, by the way, if your listeners want to order a set of the handbooks and stuff and mention it, I'll send them a free copy of that so they can look at it themselves. I'll also send them a free copy of From Freedom to Fascism. That's Aaron Russo's, you know, basically video, which is a couple hours long. Uh-huh. So, I mean, it's a good deal. All they have to do is buy the set of the handbooks. There's 4 books. I'll send them the list of all of the current members that can basically control the United States.
Okay, and
you get them all.
And your website is
NoHoax, NoHoax.com.
Okay, and
all they have to do, and have them when they put the order in, have them mention your program so we know exactly where it came from. Because I'm giving, you know, I'm not in this to make money. I'm trying to wake people up and let them make their own decisions to take care of their family. Because I can't do it for you. You know, it's like, you remember when Christ went out to the masses, he was out trying to, he says, I'm going to bring forth the sword of truth of knowledge. He's not out there to do anything else. And the same, I'm not asking like that. All I'm trying to say is, hey, wake up. It's like Ron Paul is trying to get everybody to wake up that the Federal Reserve is a private bank, right? They want to audit the Federal Reserve to open up all the Pandora's box.
But do you think that would accomplish anything? Do you think they would give us any information if they did?
Wouldn't make any difference. No. They've already got control of it. They don't. They don't care. The one that really people don't know about is George Bush. when he, before he went out of office, he gave permission to the Bank of International Settlements to come in and audit the Federal Reserve. Now, he has nothing to do with the Federal Reserve, but he gave permission, as far as he's concerned, yeah, they could go do it. Well, that's the banker's bank. Those guys, they're fighting among themselves. And that's what I found out about this. When you get up with these people at the very top, they're all trying to get to be at the very top up there. That's all.
Well, and that's the part where I was bringing in the psychopathy, because it's, to me, I view a lot of those elites in a sense kind of like the way they run these corporations, to where they gobble each other all up to the point where there's not many left, and then they have to kind of reinvent themselves so that they can play their game again.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's exactly the truth. I sat in on meetings where we had a dozen of us talking about how to reduce the population. And then we adjourned, and half of them went in the other room, and the people I was with were talking about getting rid of some of the ones in the other room. So what I equated that with is living with a group of black widow scorpions and rattlesnakes. In other words, each one of them capable of killing each other.
Right, and I just couldn't even imagine wanting to be a part of that whole inner circle there, because, I mean, when you read some of the history of the monarchies and that sort of thing, where they haven't had food tasters and everything else like that, I mean, that doesn't sound like fun to me.
No, it's not. They're sitting always looking over their shoulder to that, but, you know, they think that they're... the same thing. They're the chosen ones. They've got to that position. I used to think that way. Our attitude was, frankly, your mental attitude, at least mine was, if you weren't smart enough to get up to where we were, you deserve what you're going to get. Then you find out that they're controlling, like when I found out, I started to turn around. Now all of a sudden they decided to pull my plug, right? I mean, they could have killed me if they wanted to, but it was easier to just try to bankrupt me.
Yeah, So in other words, it's always that one-upmanship, what made you decide that you didn't want to be a part of them?
Well, what made me part of it, when they decided to, when I sat in on the meetings on population reduction, and when they also talked about getting rid of each other, and then I wasn't included. I was sitting with the governor of Colorado, as a matter of fact, in the Oval Office down, on Colfax and Broadway. And he said he got his ticket. And I said, what ticket? And then I got laid out on the Pine Gap stuff in Australia. And, that's for 35,000 of the so-called elite that they want to continue on running the world. I said, wow. But nobody asked me about giving me a ticket, so I knew I was on the outs. I was like kind of asking, the enemy prisoner of war camp, right? What's the name? Who's the enemy? All of a sudden, I'm the enemy.
You're always one of them until you don't do something that they want you to do, and then all of a sudden you find your out.
I could do no wrong before that. You could do no wrong. They'll cover up any kind of mistake that you can make. I mean, look at Obama. Look at George Bush. I mean, George Bush couldn't even speak when he came into the office. You understand? It's just a totally different game that you're out playing with. They'll protect their people all the way around. And the fact that if you go to the Bush family clear back, you'll find out that they actually helped finance Hitler.
Yes, yes. And there was, when you start doing a lot of the lineages of these people that are in office or, players and shakers and movers, they have quite the background.
That's the reason why I have the current list. I just got them yesterday. And any, like I say, if any of your listeners want to get a free copy of it, just order my set of handbooks. Because the handbooks, basically, the handbook Embracing Rainbow and Becoming, are books to awaken you. So you can be in direct contact with the ETs, frankly. And also, may be aware, the information in there is so profound, it will make you rethink who and what you are in relationship to the planet, and find out whether or not you want to be part of what we call the ground crew. In other words, people that will be able to help change whatever the future is going to be, because the future does not look good right now. I don't care which way. Even from the ETs, they tell me the same thing. They say that my last report was there's too few of the people waking up. So what it amounts to is get together with other people of like minds to support each other.
It just went out of my mind what I was going to say here. But okay, so if this place has always been a prison planet, and it would sound to me like, you know, there's nothing positive we're going to anyways.
Well, no, it is positive. It's a growth thing. It's thinking. You're thinking, you're growing, you're learning. What's the first rule in the universe? Gain all knowledge. Well, you know, that's one of the oddball things. The knowledge is not on the physical plane. It's at your soul level. So the wheel of reincarnation is a fact. I mean, it was taught in all religions till the year 553. So you can imagine the responsibility what you do will affect your next life. And I'm also coming to the conclusion, I haven't got this verified yet, I'm going to think about it, but what I'm looking at is the hell that we're going to is going to be the hell on earth. Because we're creating this incredible thing. We're going to be going back to the Stone Age right now. Isn't that going to be hell on earth?
Well, it may be hell already for some people in some certain circumstances, would it not?
Exactly. And we don't know the sequence of events or the timing on it.
So, in other words, you're pretty much questing for a lot of this knowledge on your own, just like many of us are, and you just have the ability to go visit some of these places in person.
I've taken it on myself. You can sit down and read books on it, and you can go to see movies or get video. Right now, the internet is providing all kinds of stuff. You can sort it all out. Because of my abilities, I've been able to travel around the world. So I got to be just 4 weeks or 6 weeks ago, I was in Ambato, Ecuador, with the mayor of Ambato and the group, and I did a lecture there in front of about 200 people, which were leaders that came up from, believe it or not, Brazil, Venezuela, and Colombia. And they're setting up meetings for me to come over to talk to them. I'm also talking to leaders in Ecuador that want to create a new currency. Do they want to get off the dollar? I have friends that own the banks down in Panama, and there's only 3 million people down here, so you can imagine that. But they've been a storehouse of all of the money that's been flowing around, and they're in trouble. What do they do with the money? I mean, what does the government pay for having dollars right now? Zippo, right?
Okay, so how are you positioning your money?
Well, I'm trying to get Panama to be another a storehouse for money by using gold and stuff. But when I talked to the guys down there the other day, they basically allowing Homeland Security to go in all over all the bank accounts. So what they do is see if there's any big amount of money that you got sitting in there. They cross-check it because they have the computers to see if you reported it back to the United States, because you're required as an American citizen to show that you had deposits in foreign accounts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're going now looking at the accounts themselves, and if they don't see it up there, they're seizing it. They're seizing the money. Then you got to prove where you got it, or otherwise you're a terrorist or a drug dealer or something. You got to prove yourself innocent.
So it doesn't sound like there's a lot of options unless you'd already pre-prepared long before they started setting some of this up.
Exactly, and that's the problem. That's everywhere else. I mean, Nevada used to be the real, place to have secrecy, but you can't do that there anymore either. They really set this thing up in big motion everywhere. Nevada's a state that was run by the mafia. They would make all the laws that protect themselves, you would think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's basically what was done. But the ruling parties they're opening that up now too, so you don't have that problem. I've looked and analyzed these things. I've run around the planet. I've been just about everywhere, and I can't tell you that. We still have the best system this week. I'm not too sure about how to live. I mean, we've had the best system at this point. We think we have. But it's been all based on consumerism.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
and that's not necessarily the way the thing works. I was down in the jungles in Brazil, actually, down where the Aborigines are.
Uh-huh.
And now we're talking about real Aborigines. They run around with these little, they don't have any clothes, maybe some shorts on or that kind of stuff. But they're totally happy. They don't have a TV. They don't have anything else out there. They don't even have a, their days start when the sun comes up and it sets when the sun goes down. And it's, you know, you look at the, you say, well, I've created this thing up here. I got to have my car. I got to have my whatever you're doing. You got to find out that none of this makes any sense other than you have to have air to breathe and all of our air is getting polluted. You have to have water to drink and most of our water is being polluted, right? We got everything that's in trouble.
Right, but I thought also that, I mean, from what my studies is a lot of that was done on purpose. I mean, for the utilizing the Hegelian dialectic. So, you know, then they can start, you know, controlling us by our inability to get access to the basic needs.
That's it. Yeah. And so what do? You're going to fall in line to get your food, right?
Right.
Food and water is going to be critical things. And I looked around, like, I love New Zealand. That's a country that's only got a little over 3 million people, 90 million sheep. Well, they're getting rid of a lot of sheep because nobody's buying them anymore. But, you know, it's a pretty place, but they don't let anybody come down there anymore. I mean, it's hard to get there. Australia's got a tremendous amount of problems right now. It's a big country. In the United States, you know, the largest state in the United States, you know which one that is?
Uh-huh. Alaska.
Which one? That's right. You know, it's so big, people don't realize that. You can go from Miami to Seattle, and that's about the size of the state of Alaska. And there's nobody up there either. But there's a lot of mineral resources. That's kind of like, you know, the only trouble is the weather out there. You only got certain times, and you got to live in a different thing. But as the climate's changing, and we're going to have probably another ice age, frankly, but the climate is moving around because of the ocean currents and stuff. So things are changing rather drastically. I like Central America, but most of that's being taken over by the bad guys. Colombia's taken over Mexico, the drugs, and the Mexico, the druggies have taken over southern United States. I mean, you can't go down and walk the streets in El Paso right now, or in Juarez, or that kind of stuff. It's just not safe. Of course, I say that, being joking, that you can't walk in the streets in Washington, D.C. when the sun goes down either. Did you know that?
And I've heard that's been that way for quite a while.
Yeah, it is. I was down there when I had somebody with me for protection when you go over it, but it's well known. There's more people get killed every month in Washington, D.C. by gunfire than they do over in Iraq or Afghanistan together.
Okay, so with this information, you have a purpose in getting it out. And so what is your total? Is it just to try to get to people to think or to start looking around and waking up or making a move on preparing for, you know, the apocalypse or just what's fixing to go down as far as or maybe making a change so that those that are in control no longer are in control?
Well, let's reverse that. I want everybody to be in control of their own life.
Okay.
You can take input from other people, but you have to be responsible. There's nobody responsible out here right now. They're always letting somebody else, and the other somebody else's that were out here now have taken it, so you have capitulated your abilities, and you have become one of the, I call cannon fodder. And that's what it is. We're expendables unless we take on the responsibility to take care of ourselves and our families. But you can't control them. Remember, you got free will involved in here. I can give all the information out, and I try to do that. And I have, everywhere I go, I have audiences, where I'm speaking to whatever it is, 50, 100, or 200 people. And these people have reached a point across the country because of the education now, that when I go to these lectures, it's pretty much speaking to the choir. Most of these people are aware, just like you are, of a lot of the details. I can just fill in some of the blanks because I lived them.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, I'm constantly hearing about people trying to say, prepare and have, gold or silver or something along that line. But I'm not so sure that is the answer in if you're trying to have something to survive on.
Well, gold is, and silver are just a storage of wealth. Silver is your better bet because that's going to be your bartering stuff. I mean, let's face it, a piece of gold today is $1,200 to buy it. So how many people got $1,200 to go out and buy a piece of gold? Or 10 pieces of gold is $12,000, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you can get a lot of silver because that's been the history of the planet. And the history of the planet, and that's what we have to look at, the history of the planet, when the metals become debased, in other words, they put in junk in them, then their economies go down. Well, we don't have anything back in our paper right now. They just keep increasing more paper, right?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you know, they put a few more billions of dollars out here. Well, what happened to World War II to Germany? What happened to all the marks? You had millions of them in wheelbarrows, and the people took the wheelbarrow. They could care less about the money. And that's happening to our dollar. So when people say, well, I got, well, it's the illusion of wealth. I got a good friend of mine. I just talked to her yesterday. She's in Australia right now. But she has a house in Kauai. 2.5 years ago, the house was for sale for $3.5 million. She was offered $560,000. Now, what do you call that? That's the illusion of wealth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in Vegas right now, you can get a 2-bedroom condo for about $35,000. A year ago, it was $100,000. So where is the real reality? It's what people are willing to pay. The reason why in Vegas they're doing that, because there are no jobs. There's just, you know, if you don't have jobs, you don't have money to pay for taxes. You don't have money to pay for the utilities. There are outside, and in California right now, the banks that have taken over little subdivisions, they've mowed the houses down because the counties come in and assess them for the taxes and everything else. They just put the things back down to regular, you know, regular ground. Las Vegas, they pay you $1 a foot to pull up your lawn because it's taking too much water.
Well, and that, I mean, that definitely makes sense for sure. I was curious. I'd seen a video about that, you know, the banks tearing those new projects down. Now that makes sense as to why they're doing that. So they're being...
Well, it's yeah, it's economics. They don't have to pay or do anything. Yeah, it's the same thing with a lot of condominium projects. You know, I built condos. What if you got a condo, you have an association, everybody pays so much to have the outside taken care of? What if 80% of the condos are now vacant? Who's going to pay for the maintenance, right? What, the 20% of the people that are left? So what they're doing is walking away from them, and the bank gets them back. So the bank looks, and most of the time, people at this point have destroyed the buildings. And when you get through looking at them, and the houses, the way we build stuff right now, it only has a limited life. You look at the house, very few houses are last, you know, 25 or 30 years. Then they go down and got to remodel them or do something to them. It's cheaper right now because of the new regulations just to bulldoze them down and build a new one.
Hmm. Well, I want to revisit something briefly before we start winding down here, is because when you talked briefly about Billy Meyer, and I got into looking a little bit at the information on him, you know, numerous times over the past. And I had a question that kept coming up, and since you kind of know a lot about him, he was talking about all these different, he'd been all these different things in his lifetime. Are you following what I'm saying? And
sure.
I was trying to total the years and stuff, and I really had some questions there. And do you have an explanation, or can you explain?
Well, Billy was, he incarnated in this planet as one of the, you know, his first involvement was ETs when he was a kid over in India. And so, you know, he was a different group over there. When he was over in Switzerland, he was with, there was several groups that visited him, frankly. In fact, when I was over there the last time, there was a guy seven meters tall, you know, 21 feet tall, was over there just observing Billy, because he's kind of a, you know, he was given a job to take the most and the best photographs and the best information. I mean, I'm currently reviewing all of his information that he had. I got 2,000 pages of documentation,
uh-huh.
A lot of, you know, from him. And a lot of it, when he was taken forward in time, was giving me the data on what's going on right now. In other words, I already know what's going to happen. We're getting ready for World War III. It's going to last 4 years and 3 months. I have all the details. But when you start telling people like that, then they want to sit back and wait to see it happen. Well, I'm trying to prevent a lot of that for, like, you and me and your listeners, right? It's going to happen. But you don't have to buy into it. From that point, get yourself out of harm's way. That whole planet is going to be affected this time. That's only because of the environmental impact that we're going to have, and which we are doing to the planet right now.
So when you hear about projects where the government does remote viewing, that they're actually doing something like Billy Meyer, what he does.
Well, some of this stuff. Dr. Beck and I said Dr. Beck, he was on that project originally out in California. You're probably aware of him. But his job was to help do the remote viewing. There were several people that were doing in the classes, and they've been on, you know, coast to coast and everything. It's another one of these subjective matters, because the person that's doing the remote viewing is merely soul travel. It's out looking, you know, using your mind, looking at other things, and then bringing it back. And now that's discernment of the person that's doing it. It's like our pilots right now. They put on a helmet now. They think to launch the missiles. That's what they just thought does it. And there are some people that have put together devices up in, are you familiar with El Dorado Springs in Colorado?
Yeah.
You know, it's just south of Boulder a little bit. They were building a device for anybody. It was a game. I may have one or two of them around. Anyway, it was a game that you put on. You can actually learn to teach your mind to think against your computer. So you can start playing games, just your mind.
I
have a couple of those around there. You know, they cost a couple hundred dollars. But what it was set up in motion so you could learn how to do exactly what we're talking about. Well, that's some of the stuff that is done by just a mind code. Brian O'Leary is an Apollo astronaut. He's a good friend of mine. Anyway, he goes out to everybody and teaches everybody. Remember the old parlay tricks of how to bend spoons?
Uh-huh.
That's all mind control. And also, you can keep looking at some of the technologies that are there. Are all your mind made manifest, right? You're thinking. You're putting together the thoughts. Well, what if we could get enough people together to rethink the ending of the story, but we don't know how this is going to end, so we have to ask, and that's what I do, and that's the basis of the books, to get enough people that will read the material to come into balance with it, so we can ask higher energies who have lived this before. You know, we've gone through this before. Another planet's another place. I mean, there are billions of planets inhabited. We just don't have the technology to go someplace. As they said, if we did go someplace, we'd trash another planet a half the time. We know how to get rid of this one big time, right?
Okay, so what I kind of conclude from what you're saying, you're almost making it sound like we don't have free will, but at the same time you're sounding like if the people got together, they could change the ending of that story that they are talking
about.
Well,
that's right. That's exactly what I'm saying. You have free will to make a decision, but I'm saying that we don't know what the decision is going to be, because the only information I have is the history, right? History is two words, his story.
Right.
It's always written by the victor, so we don't know what really happened. We can find out. I mean, we got the documents from Atlantis and Lemuria, but they're hiding a bunch of that. The Vatican has a lot of material. They don't want to release that because it wrecks that. From Billy's material, we've got one more pope, and that's the end of the Catholic religion. I mean, you know, I'm just telling you what they're telling us right now in line. The whole thing's coming apart because it's being so corrupt.
Right, but what I think I'm hearing you saying underlying all of this is that, you know, we don't, if we really do wake up and become more conscious and utilize our minds, then we can change the outcome.
Yeah, you will change yourself, the way you look at the world, the way I've changed everything. I'm not out here playing the game of Monopoly like I used to. I was, you know, just as ruthless as the next one. I mean, I was out taking over companies, and that's what I did. I volunteered to become president of companies, and I'd go get rid of the people. And then we'd split the spoils, whatever I did.
What a job.
Well, it was just a big game of Monopoly. My idea was, if you weren't smart enough to get up to where we were, what do you think these guys up here now, they scream because they get a $25 million bonus. What do you think about the stockholders? Stockholders don't get anything, do they?
No.
But the CEOs now have learned they just rape the company for what they can, because the stockholders have no bearing. And most of the stocks are held by pension funds and whatever, and they have no voting rights. So what happens is we've got very few people. David Rockefeller, for instance, he's 90-something years old right now. He owns 4.5% of 90% of the world's corporations through his various trust things he has.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of power, because it's voting power.
Okay, now, do you think he's been involved a lot with any of the life extension stuff? Are these guys trying to get into that kind of thing?
No, I got what you're saying. Yeah, I got involved with some of that stuff, but the trouble is that we were designed to live to be, you know, roughly 100 years. But they limited our life because of what we were created as warriors, giving us limited life but intelligence. But we turned on what was created in the first place. That's the reason why we have so many countries at war right now.
Well, I definitely have questions as to whether we've evolved.
Well, we have. I mean, we're, you know, I get in, let's put it this way. You just have to have tolerance. You know, the four laws of the universe, just for listeners, the first one's the law of attraction. In other words, it's what you put out, you're going to get back. Or Christ said, what you sow, you shall reap, right? Mm-hmm. The second law is the law of intent. Since everything is thought, what is the intent of what your thought is, right? The next thing you have to do, the third law, is the law of allowance. In other words, you have to allow your thought to make manifest. It's like Christ when he takes a couple of loaves of bread and some fish. How did he make enough to feed the multitude? Well, he thought that, and thought made manifest, so he had the ability to create things. Well, that's basically what we are, condensed thought. Well, the last thing, however, and everybody leaves that out. It's like, they have all these books and everything. You're going to create all this thing. If it's not in balance, it'll come unwound. Well, welcome to the unbalanced planet right now.
Now that makes sense, but I've not heard that last one either. You know, but it does make a lot of sense. Just those three for sure, and then the fourth one, you know, that
it's got to be in balance. It can't be a one. In other words, I'm not going to out make you rich. What is the rest of the planet? Everybody, we were created to live in abundance, and abundance is different for different people, but basically have enough food and water and to be, and you know, and share and help everybody else. But then we have all these other things that have stepped into the point, to the greed, the power, the ego, all the, if you want to call it the deadly sins in order to upset us. And I also got a book written by the ETs on that too, that went into very heavy details on all that stuff, on how we've basically allowed ourselves to be controlled and manipulated.
You know, and getting down to the closing part, but you mentioned something about the Committee of 300. So you published John Coleman's book then? Is that what you're...
I financed John Coleman. I published all of his books at one time. And then I got into big troubles with him because he's not really John Coleman. That isn't his real name anyway. So, there's a long story in that, and I would just let it go from there. I got into his ego. He got involved with a bunch of people, and he thought the world should do all this stuff. But we financed him. I did it. I even financed his car, his house, his television, everything, you know.
Interesting. So that's why you don't get any answers when you try to get him for interviews or anything, huh?
I try to help. Well, I thought John and his wife Lena's, and you know, his son John's an airline pilot. You know, they're neat. I thought they were neat people and very directive. And John has put out he's nothing more than, he already told you, he's MI6. Where do you think he gets to the intelligence that he's putting out?
Well, I assume that's a lot of that information comes from those kind of directions.
Oh, of course. He gets on the phone all the time, every night with Washington, D.C. But, you know, again, that's not his real name even. You know, Eustace Mullins, I don't remember him, but Eustace did a big write-up on him sometime. But we won't go on that on the air. Bless John, let him go do his thing.
Okay.
That's all we can do.
Okay. Well, you know, I bet you do know a slew of people that would be real interesting just to even know what you know. I appreciate you agreeing to come on and share your thoughts with my audience and your background and just give some people some food for thought and see what they can, you know.
If they can digest it, that's all we want to do, digest a couple of things I had. I hope they just think about it. A, they're responsible no matter what. Try to disprove on anything I said tonight. If they want to, go to my website. If you got any questions, email me. I don't care. I'll respond to anything. I have nothing to hide.
Okay. And again, I want to thank you and maybe do this again sometime. So,
okay. Thank you. Have a good one. And let's hope, I know this year is not going to be good, but it will be good for the people to wake up and get prepared. So let's do that.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye.